Hello everyone, my name is Eli Davis, 12th Apostolic Presbyterian Congregation on down in 12th Town, Liberty Hill, Texas. Today is September 13, 2017, or Z23-2021. We will start our first service today with a song entitled Father Alone. Tempted and tired, we're off made to wander. Oh, it shall be the soul that lives on. Oh, there are others living about us, never most lusted, nor in the wrong. Father alone will know all about it. Father alone will understand why. Sirup, my brother, living in sunshine, will understand it over and by. When death has come and taken a loved one, it leaves a home so lonely and dreary. Then do we wonder why all this prosper, living so wicked year after year? Father alone will know all about it. Father alone will understand why. Keep my brother living the sunshine, will understand it by and by. They foretell death, said our loving master, a few more days to labor and wait. Doors of the road will then seem as nothing, as we sweep through the beautiful gate. Father alone will know all about it. Father alone will understand why. Keep my brother living the sunshine, we'll understand it over and by. When we see Yahshua coming in glory, when he comes from his home in the sky, then we shall meet him in that bright mansion. We'll understand it over and by. Father alone will know all about it. Father alone will understand why. Keep my brother living the sunshine, we'll understand it over and by. Part 5, The World Yesterday, Today, and Tomorrow. Let's continue on. We're on page 63. North defeats South, takes Egypt and Palestine. So the king of the north shall come and cast up a mountain, take the most fenced city. And the arms of the south shall not withstand, neither his chosen people. Neither shall there be any strength to withstand, but he that cometh against him shall do according unto his own will, and none shall stand before him. And he shall stand in the glorious land, Palestine, which by his hand shall be consumed. Verses 15 and 16. This scripture definitely brings us to the time of the third regime and the kingdom of the north, that of the pagan Rome, which completely overthrew the first regime of the kingdom of the south, that of the Ptolemaic dynasty. Egypt and Palestine then passed from the hands of the king of the south, Ptolemy, into the hands of the king of the north, Rome, in the year 63 B.C. The Roman general Pompey marched against Jerusalem, Syria, had become a Roman thing, the battleground by Hilaire, Belloc, and in 31 B.C., Egypt became a Roman province, New Student's Reference Book. Since the power which overthrew the Ptolemaic dynasty and took Egypt and Palestine is by the angel identified as the King of the North, and since pagan Rome was that power, it follows that the title King of the North, after passing from Lamarchus, whose rule was the first northern regime, Seleucus, whose rule was the second northern regime, fell to the Roman emperors, whose rule was the third northern regime. With the suppression of the regimes, we are brought down to about 31 B.C., at which time Rome ruled not only the dominions of Lamarchus, Seleucus, and Ptolemy, but also the dominion of Cassander, Alexander, entire empire. In the glory of the kingdom, then shall stand up in his estate a raiser of taxes in the glory of the kingdom. Verse 20. Augustus Caesar, the Roman emperor, is the one who taxed the world. And it came to pass in those days that there went out a decree from Caesar Augustus that all the world should be taxed, and this taxing was first made when Cyrenius was governor of Syria, and all went to be taxed, everyone into his own city. And Joseph went up from Galilee, out of the city of Nazareth, into Judea, unto the city of David, which is called Bethlehem, because he was of the house and lineage of David. Luke 2:1-4. As the raiser of taxes was to stand when the kingdom was in its glory, the statement implies that its glory was to wane, overflown by a flood, loses Egypt and Palestine, and with the arms of the flood shall they be overflown from before him, and shall be broken, yea, also the prince of the covenant. Verse 22. Here is shown the breakup of the Roman Empire at the hands of the barbarian hordes, which swept down and as a flood overflowed it. See map 8. Again rising to power, and after the league made with him, he shall work deceitfully, for he shall come up and shall become strong with a small people. Verse 23. From this prophetic statement we see that Rome was to rise from its ruin and humiliation, and again become strong, this time by deceit and with a small people. In this chain of the prophecy, then, Rome is shown in two different phases, pagan and ecclesiastical, just as it is shown by the fourth symbolical beast of Daniel 7. Thus it was that after pagan Rome saw itself overrun and humbled to the ground, down and out, so to speak, it conceived a deceit by which to bring itself to power again. The scheme resulted in the ecclesiastical code of the laws, the enforcement of which it carried out with a small people, the so-called Christians. It did not call for the dethroning of the kings, but rather for the Christianizing them. Thus, peaceably, the king of the north succeeded in putting over his scheme to reign as the spiritual king of kings in the name of the Christian's God. First, it reigned over the nation. Second, over the kings of nations. These historical and biblical facts show that the Christianized nations under one spiritual head constitute Rome's second faith. And then the inspiration gave him the title King of the North, as his throne kings and peasants alike within the far-flung boundaries of the Christianized Rome bowed down in absolute submission and worshiped so thoroughly, so through subtlety, he again became strong as the following paragraphs of his history confirm. Number 5, the historical record of the flattery and forced Christianity. The bishops, the overseers of the Christian churches, at first demeaned themselves in the meek spirit of the founder of the religion. But at length they sought temporal power and worldly advantage. The bishops of the great cities assumed authority over those of the surrounding country. And Rome, Constantinople, Alexandria, Antioch, and Jerusalem became the seats of the ecclesiastical power, and their bishops might be said to constitute an oligarchy in the church. Rome became, through the Dark Ages, a king of kings. Nay more, he assumed to be in the place of Yahweh. Universal History, 198. At the coronation of the Charlemagne, Pope Leo III, after placing the crown upon his head, saluted him with the title and Emperor of the Romans. He had quelled the barbarous nations of Europe, with the exception of the Danes or the Normans, and his kingdom comprised France, Germany, Italy, and north of Spain. From the East Irene, the Empress of the Constantinople sought his friendship, and even the Caliphate of Baghdad, the princely Harun al-Rashid, entered into a correspondence with him and sent him the keys of the holy sepulchres of Jerusalem. Charlemagne, though a barbarian who at first could not write his name but sign his treaties with the hilt of the sword and enforced them with his point, had yet great sympathy with the learned men. Wittekin, the most valiant and renowned of their clans, of their chiefs, at length embraced Christianity and resigned his arm. Charlemagne then obliged the Saxon people, under penalty of death, to receive baptism. He invaded and conquered the Huns and Sclavonians, 202. Charles, unable to repel the invaders, ceded to them the province of Nastra, thereafter called Normandy, and gave to Rollo his daughter in marriage. The Norman chief was, however, to do homage unto Charles, kneeling and kissing the royal toe. Alfred, King of England, granted the Danes permission to settle in Northumberland and East Anglia on the condition of their being governed by his laws and embracing Christianity. They were accordingly baptized, and the king himself stood good godfather for the Guthrum, their chief, page 209. He found a pretext for invading the kingdom of Lombardy and the hostility of the Desiderius against the Pope. Charlemagne crossed the great St. Bernard from Geneva and successfully took Pavia and Verona. Lombardy was soon reduced to submission, and the king made captive. Charlemagne next visited Rome, where he was received by Pope Adrian I with every demonstration of joy and hailed as the deliverer of the church. He caused himself to be crowned King of Lombardy, page 201. In this subtle manner came the king of the north and obtained the kingdom by the flatteries, verse 21, and by the honor of the God of forces, as prophesied in verse 24, 38, and 39. Number 6, history explains his dividing the land for gain. For the feudal system is a term used to express the manner in which the chiefs, who conquered by the aid of their armies and settled in the conquered countries, divided the lands among their followers, and the liabilities and privileges growing out of this division. When the chief or king saw the whole undivided territory on the one hand, and the body of his followers wishing to settle it on the other, the question naturally arose, how should he divide it? The unsettled state of the world was to be considered. If he divided it among the people without preserving a warlike attitude, they would become the prey of some of the armed horde, still moving in search of settlement. The leader, therefore, after retaining what he chose, gave out the lands and large portions to his principal captain, on condition of their doing homage to him, paying a certain sum of money, and appearing in the field with a certain number of retainers, whenever he called for their aid. These chief officers, after keeping what they desired for their own use, divided the remainder of the land assigned them to their own favorites, who were to furnish money and soldiers to them, as they were to the king. The conquered inhabitants who remained became slaves and were transferable with the land. These kings rose by their own prowess, but on ascending with their nations, the monarchy was generally first elective and their families then hereditary. Universal History, page 200. Number 7, the second regime of the South defeats the fourth regime of the North, and he shall stir up his power and his courage against the king of the South with a great army. And the king of the South shall be stirred up to battle with a very great and mighty army, but he shall not stand, for they shall forecast devices against him. Yea, they that feed of the portion of his meat shall destroy him, and his army shall overflow, and many shall fall down slain. Then shall he return into his land with great riches, and his heart shall be against the holy covenant, and he shall do exploits and return unto his own land. At the time appointed, he shall return and come toward the south, and it shall not be as the former or as the latter, for the ships of Chittim shall come against him. Therefore he shall be grieved and return and have indignation against the holy covenant. So shall he do, he shall even return and have intelligence of them that forsake the holy covenant, verse 25, 26, 28 to 30. We have already seen from the prophecy, also from history, that the first regime of the South, the Ptolemaic, which is your Arab regime, Egypt, was overthrown by the third regime of the North, that would be Rome, pagan Rome, that of the pagan Rome, and as the pagan Rome never waged war against any other power of the South, 2 points stand out clearly. First, following the Ptolemaic regime, another king of the South must have risen. And second, the war against this king of the South was waged by the regime subsequent to pagan Rome, that of the Christianized Rome. Okay. So we have two different Romes that attacked the king of the, two different kings of the South. The fourth regime of the North is stirred up his power and his courage against the king of the South. The only regime that has risen from the South since the Ptolemaic dynasty went down, and that has ruled Egypt and Palestine, is that of the Moors, a Mohammedan Arabic-speaking race of the mixed descent, forming part of the population of the Barbary and deriving their name from the Mari, the ancient inhabitants of the Mara Tamia, whose pure lineal descendants are, however, the Amerzurgs, a branch of the Berbers. The modern Moors have sprung from a union of the ancient inhabitants of this region with their Arab conquerors, who appeared in the 7th century. As the Mohammedan conquerors of the Visigoths in Spain, 711 to 713, came from the North Africa, the name Moor was also applied to them by the Spanish chroniclers, and in that connection is synonymous with the Arab and Saracen. These Moors pushed northward into France until they were repulsed by the Charles Martel at the Great Battle of the Tours in 732, after which they practically restricted themselves to Spain south of the Ebro and the Sierra of Guadarrama. The expelled Moors settling in the north of Africa founded cities from which to harass the Spanish coast and finally develop into the piratical states of the Barbary, whose depredations were a source of the irritation to the civilized Christian powers, even till well into the present century. Now, this is the Moors were your Arabs, these are your Muslims, harassing their neighbors back then. And you get that information from 20th Century Encyclopedia, Volume 6, page 24. The conflicts between the South and the North following the Greco-Roman Wars were between the Mohammedans and the Christians. Okay, here's your Christians, which is actually Catholics. You're dealing with Arabs and Catholics here. These Christians was actually the Crusaders. At that time, therefore, while the title King of the North applies to the rulers of Christianized Rome, that the title King of the South applies to the Mohammedan rulers, which are your Muslims, and so much as the Saracens, Moors, Arabs, and Turks, the Muslims are the successors of the Mohammedan empire and the different regimes. We herein, for the sake of the brevity, use the name Mohammedans for all, as if they were all one regime. This prophetically and historically chronicled events make it impossible to misapply the title or to misconstrue the powers. Moreover, the verses 25, 26, and 28, and to 30, upon which we are now concentrating, credit victory to the King of the South, and history shows that at the exact time the scriptures points out the Mohammedans arose from Africa and also invaded the Christian nation, which was your Catholics had taken over, the Protestants, and called themselves Christians. They were the King of the North. So this Christian nation now represents the King of the North, north of the Mediterranean. Then it was that Rome lost Egypt and Palestine. In these verses, the personal pronouns of the two antagonists, the King of the South and the King of the North, are not traceable by the grammatical law, but only by the logic of events. And he, the King of the North, shall stir up his power and his courage against the King of the South with a great army, and the King of the South shall be stirred up to battle with a very great and mighty army. But he, the King of the North, shall not stand, for they shall forecast devices against him. Yea, they that feed of the portion of his meat, the meat of the King of the North, shall destroy him, the King of the North, and the King of the South. Armies shall overflow, and many shall fall down a slain. Then, being defeated, shall he, the King of the North, return unto his land with great riches, and his heart shall be against the holy covenant, and he, the king of the north, shall do exploits and return unto his own land. At the time appointed he shall return and come toward the south, that he shall not be as the former or as the latter. Verses 25, 26, 28, and 29. Though the he of verse 28 returns to his land with great riches, he did not take them as booty from the king of the south, whose army overflowed him and caused many to fall down slain. Notwithstanding, verse 26, but he must have received them from the converts to his religion, those who ate the portion of his meat, verse 26, his servant, and who later destroyed him, were at the outset the Protestants. As the he of verse 29 returns at the appointed time and comes toward the south, he is therefore the king of the north, going down for another battle. These are the particulars which history confirms, and thus it is seen that the bracketed identification of the pronouns is correct. For the Western incursion of the Mohammedans began in 639 A.D., when they invaded the country and Egypt became a Mohammedan province. The new students of reference book. Thus, following the Ptolemies, the Mohammedans, whose rule was the second southern regime, came into the title King of the South. By 1814 A.D., Rome, the King of the North, had already ceded Egypt and Palestine unto the Mohammedans, to the King of the South. Conscience dominating Christianity from the North and conscience dominating Mohammedanism from the South have ever since been in the territorial and religious conflict, and whichever one took a slice of the other's dominion, he forced upon penalty of the death for a non-conformity his religion, his religious beliefs upon his captives. Number 8, both spoke lies, and both these kings' hearts shall be to do mischief, and they shall speak lies at one table. But it shall not prosper, for yet the end shall be at the time appointed. Verse 27. At one table at which both kings speak is figurative, that is, ecclesiastical Rome declared to their captives that the Roman religion was foreshadowed by the angel Gabriel's announcement unto Mary that she was to bear a son, the Savior of the world. Likewise, Mohammedanism next declared to the same people at the same table, when they became their captives, that the angel Gabriel appeared to Muhammad and gave him the religion which all the people of the earth must have. So when the king of the north, the Rome, pagan Rome, which is ecclesiastical Rome today, which is the Catholic Church, whenever they overthrew the Mohammedans, the Arabs, they took those Muslims captive. And they told, and the Catholics told the Muslims, the angel Gabriel appeared unto me and told me that I have the true religion, and that I represent Mary, the one that bore the son, her son, Yeshua. And then this here Muslim comes along, this Arab comes along, and he overthrows the Catholics, the king of the north, the Pope. And he takes the Pope's people captive under his captivity. Now they were once under the captivity of Catholicism, now they're under captivity to Muslim. And these two rulers, North, the King of the North, King of the South, they tell their captives a different lie. Okay, let's continue. Though Rome's declaration as to just what Gabriel said to Mary is founded, in fact, Rome's actual religion, openly coded with Christianity, was not the religion of the one whose birth Gabriel forespoke. As to Muhammad's receiving his religion from Gabriel, he never did. Thus both the Muhammadized Pasha and the Christianized, this Muhammadized Pasha is your Muslim, your Arabs, and his Christianized Lords, Catholicism, were speaking lies at one table. So the Catholics and the Muslims met together, facing off at each other across from the table, one table, and they were both telling lies. So no, Gabriel told me I'm in charge. No, there's no, Gabriel told me that I have the true religion. I'm in charge. But these shall not prosper. So these two shall not prosper, declared the angel. For yet the end shall be at the time appointed. That is, the false religions, Catholics and Muslims, will come to an end at an appointed time. They will not endure forever. Map 9 shows the final result. The nations that were permanently Christianized and the nations that were permanently Muhammadanized. Takes forever to figure out how to pronounce that word, Muhammadanized. Number 9, against the Holy Covenant, seeing the necessity of the compromising with the heathen in order to make an easy prey of them, the king of the north therefore set his heart against the Holy Covenant. Now pay close attention to this. That's in verses 28, 30, 32. That's in Daniel 11. This is an end time prophecy. That is, he dropped from the Christian creed the Sabbath of creation, the seventh day Sabbath. Exodus 20, verse 8 to 11, which the Yahweh blessed and hallowed as a memorial of his works, a perpetual covenant. Exodus 31, 16 and 17. The king of the north, having intelligence only with those who did forsake the holy covenant, clears 2 points. First, that all did not forsake the Sabbath. Second, that the small people, with whom he became strong, were not the faithful followers of Yahshua, but the unfaithful ones, those that had apostatized from the truth, from the Sabbath. And such as do wickedly against the covenant shall he corrupt by the flatteries. But the people that do know their Elohim shall be strong and do exploits. Verse 32. This verse reveals the character of each class. First of the unfaithful, and second of the faithful. As for the destiny of the faithful, we read, and they that understand among the people shall instruct many. Yet they shall fall by the sword and by the flame, by the captivity and by the spoil many days. Now when they shall fall, they shall be holpen with a little help, but many shall cleave to them with flattery. Verses 33 and 34. These verses, besides foreshadowing the martyrdom of the faithful followers of Yahshua, predict the Reformation, the little help, and foretell that its present fallen state is caused by flatteries. Number 10, pollutes the sanctuary, takes away the daily. An arm shuts down his part, and they shall pollute the sanctuary of the strength, and shall take away the daily sacrifice, and they shall place the abomination that maketh desolate. Verse 31. This is Daniel 11. Now, these are three links of the truth the polluted and saturated taken away of the daily and the placing of the abomination in the prophetic chain of the events, bring us several centuries into the Christian era. Is conclusively confirmed by the Yahshua referring unto them as in the future from the time he uttered the command. When you therefore shall see the abomination of desolation spoken of by the Daniel the prophet, stand in the holy place, whoso readeth let him understand, and let them which be in Judea flee into the mountains. Matthew 24:15-16. A heathen sanctuary is already unclean, and therefore cannot be polluted. Clearly, then, the sanctuary of the strength, not the heathen, was polluted by the bringing into it a pagan priesthood, and the unconverted heathen. For the sanctuary is of the Christian church. For during the period in which the pollution took place, there was no sanctuary in Jerusalem concerning the daily. Read tract number 3, The Judgment and the Harvest, 38 and 39. Okay, so there hasn't been a Jerusalem set up since it was rebuilt and starting in 535 B.C. There hasn't been another one to take the place of it since that last one was destroyed. So therefore, this daily has to be sometime in our day, in these last days, that was talking about being taken away by this here man of sin, the Catholic Church. Alright, disregard a Yahweh and the desire of women. Neither shall he regard the Elohim of his fathers, nor the desire of women, nor regard any God, for he shall magnify himself above all. This shall he do in the most strong hold to the strange God, whom he shall acknowledge and increase with glory. And he shall cause them to rule over many, and shall divide the land for gain. Verses 37 and 39. Number 11. Disregards a God and the desire of women. Neither shall he regard the God of his fathers, nor the desire of women, nor regard any God, for he shall magnify himself above all. This shall he do in the most strongholds of the strange God, whom he shall acknowledge and increase with glory. And he shall cause them to rule over many, and shall divide the land for gain. Verses 37-39. No nation that Christianized Rome fulfills this prophecy. For she is the only one that disregards the God of her fathers, the pagan God, and acknowledges a strange God, the God of the Christians. So they stopped acknowledging Baal, and they started acknowledging the living Yahweh that belonged to the Christians. And although she professed to have wholeheartedly accepted the Christian's God, this scripture exposes the falsity of her profession. Neither shall he regard the desire of women. Women's desire is a home, Genesis 3:16. A desire which the Yahweh placed in her heart. The Roman institution of the nunneries, therefore, is not in the Yahweh's order. Number 12. The fifth regime of the north defeats the second regime of the south. And at the time of the end shall the king of the south push up the king of the north. Verse 40. The angel that dictated Daniel's writings explained that in the time of the end, these prophecies were to be revealed, And that at that time many shall run to and fro, and knowledge shall be increased. Daniel 12:4. Modern inventions, especially in the realm of the travel and of the communications, are recognized as the fulfillment of the predicted increase of the knowledge. The present increase of the knowledge, therefore, shows that we are now living in the time of the end. At the beginning of it, declared inspiration, in the 18th century, the king of the south shall put the king of the north, push at the king of the north, the time in which the king of the north shall come against him, against the king of the south, like a whirlwind, with the chariots, and with horsemen, and with many ships, and he shall enter into the countries, and shall overflow and pass over. He shall enter also into the glorious land, and many countries shall be overthrown, but these shall escape out of his hand, even Edom and Moab, and the chief of the children of Ammon. He shall stretch forth his hand also upon the countries, and the land of Egypt shall not escape, but he shall have power over the treasures of the gold and of silver, and over all the precious things of Egypt, and the Libyans and the Ethiopians shall be at his steps. Verses 40-43. Passing beyond the prophetic declaration of the Mohammedan victories, that is your Muslims, and Catholics with the Crusaders prevailing over the Arabs, victories, and coming to the time of the end in the 18th century, we find that the Christianized king of the north in his fifth regime, the Christian governments independent of the church, is at the outset to overrun the king of the south, the Mohammedan empire, and is finally to retake from him Egypt and Palestine and many other countries besides those which comprise the Mohammedan empire. Map 10 emphasizes that the Turkish empire and its greatness, and also gives the dates of the various provinces, the dates that the various provinces fell, according unto the map, for the decline of the empire commenced in 1699, at the time of the end. Now, this is not the time of the end of the world. This is time at the end of this 1260-year prophecy of Daniel, where it talked about the 1260 years during Daniel 7. Starting in 538, ending in 1798. So 1699, you had another 100 years before this time of the end of the Dark Ages is completed. Now that's what was left out of this article here by the V.T. Hotter. So we know that 1699 wasn't at the time of the end. We entered into the latter years of this Earth's history. But not at the end of the last prophetic hour, the 12th hour, until 1915, when England declared Turkish sovereignty at an end and established a protectorate. So this time of the end is talking about right here, where then it met its fulfillment in 1915, according to V.T. Hotter. But since 1883, following the Arab Pasha rebellion, Egypt had been practically ruled by the Great Britain under a consul general. The new student's reference book, Palestine, the Glorious Land, for long years the home of the Hebrew race, was under control of the Rome in the time of the Yashur. In the 7th century, it passed under the Muslim power in the 7th century, And from 1516 to 1919 was in the hands of the Turks and a part of the Turkish Empire. The World Book, Edom, Moab, and the chief children of the Ammon, those of the Transjordan, then came under the mandate of the Great Britain, see map 5, page 18. For the word, however, saith, they shall escape out of his hand, showing that though he now has them, he is to lose them, and the Libyans and the Ethiopians shall be at his steps. Perhaps they shall follow him before him, in order to fix the truth in our minds before passing from the prophecy fulfilled unto the prophecy unfulfilled. It is expedient to attend unto the following review. After the dividing of the Alexander's dominion, Egypt and Palestine were, as previously seen, ruled first by the Ptolemies, second by the pagan Rome, verse 15 and 16, third by the Mohammedans at the downfall of the Christianized Rome, in other words, and third by the Arabs out of Egypt. At the downfall of the Christianized Rome, verse 22. And fourth, again by the Christians, specifically by the Great Britain, verse 41. These are the only historical and prophetically recorded supersessions involving the ancient lands of Egypt and Palestine, the surrendering of these countries by one prophetic king to the other, unmistakably identifies the king of the north and the king of the south, from the time of the dividing of the Alexander's empire to the present time, and leaves no room for the doubt or for the argument. Rome. Rome's the king of the north. Of the north entering a second time into the glorious land, that's in Israel, Palestine, verse 41, shows that though, as aforementioned, it once took the land from the Ptolemies, or the Arabs, or the Egyptians, from that ruled the king of the south. Verse 16, it later, in 633 A.D., lost it to the Turks, and in 1919, in the time of the end, wholly regained it. Here is simple proof that in the modern times, the Mohammedan, the Egyptian, Arab rulers are in the prophecy called the King of the South, while the England's kings, along with the disrupted family of the Christianized kings, the Catholic kings from the Catholic countries, whom prophecy says will not cleave one to another, Daniel 2:43. So these are Christianized kings, which are Catholics. They don't cleave one to another, Daniel 2:43, are called kings of the north. In her pagan period, Rome is symbolized by the great image, the two legs of the iron, and in her Christianized period, by its feet and toes of the iron mixed with the clay. Thus, that the king of the north, Daniel 11 and 7, and the little horn power, having the eyes of the man and the mouth speaking great things, Daniel 7:25, are one and the same power. It is again shown by the fact that the time times and a half is the time given in the both instances. See Daniel 12:7. The 12th chapter is a continuation of the 11th. It is now clearly seen that the passing of Egypt and Palestine from the hands of one people to another is the key which has unlocked the mystery of the Daniel 11, and the truth shining out with such resplendence makes exceedingly clear that the popular doctrines that Turkey is the king of the north and that England is the emerged kingdom of Israel are calculated by the spirit of error so as to cause Yahweh's people to utterly lose a sight of the truth. And for the taking of their stand, they know not where. Number 13 declares war, but not against the king of the south. So far in this chain of the events, each link has been a prophecy fulfilled. But the verses which we are next to consider contain the links of the prophecy unfulfilled. Through the eye of the faith, therefore, we are now to look into the future. For tidings out of the east and out of the north shall trouble him. Therefore, he shall go forth with great fury to destroy and utterly to make away many. Verse 44. The king's final trouble is not to arise from the king of the south pushing at him, but from tidings out of the east and out of the north showing that he is drawn into this last struggle for the supremacy, not by anyone declaring war against him, but by his declaring war against many, because tidings out of the east and out of the north have troubled him. If Germany's aggressive activities on the north of the Mediterranean and the Japanese on the east of it are the tidings which have led England into the war against many, and there is no doubt about it, then this Second World War will lead to the fulfillment of the entire chapter under consideration. Number 4, his last act, and he shall plant the tabernacles of his palace. This is number 14. Between the seas and the glorious holy mountain, yet he shall come to his end and none shall help him. Verse 45. It is self-evident that the planting of the tabernacles of his palace cannot mean planting his capital, for the tabernacles therefore may denote a branch of his palace, and his choosing to plant them in the glorious holy mountain indicates that the place is intended to attached to his tabernacles, the holiness of the Christian's Yahweh, investing the tabernacles of his palace with such sanctity, can mean that it is to the house, the headquarters of the soon coming ecclesiastical world government, which we have already considered. But one location, perhaps Mount Sinai, is between the seas, the Red Sea and the Mediterranean. His choosing it instead of Jerusalem, this is Saudi Arabia now, Mount Sinai in the south, there in the desert, implies that it is because Palestine, Israel, as well as Edom, Moab, and Ammon, which belongs to Israel, shall escape out of his hand. The statement, he shall come to his end and none shall help him, shows that he has previously been helped by some other power, that he will not continue long hereafter, and most likely means that his ecclesiastic system will be overthrown by the horns of the scarlet-colored beast, Revelation 17:16. It now being apparent that the tabernacles of his palace are supposed to represent holiness, and that the woman riding the beast, Revelation 17:3, settles the world's social, economic, political, and religious problem, the truth is clear that the present Christian governments are to be reorganized and ruled by an ecclesiastical head, not by the Hitler. Our prayer, therefore, is that all make sure that their names be in the Michael's Book of Life, for those whose names are not there will be left to go down in the eternal ruin. as party reassurance that we are now living in the time of the end, and as that time is about to pass into eternity, we quote the angel's solemn words, "And at that time shall Michael stand up, the great prince which standeth for the children of thy people, and there shall be a time of trouble, such as never was since there was a nation, even that same time, and at that time thy people shall be delivered, every one that shall be found written in the book, and many of them that sleep in the dust of the earth shall awaken, some to everlasting life, and some to shame and everlasting contempt." Daniel 12, 1 and 2. Conclusion. Since the prophecies dealt with herein linked together many centuries of the history, we have, in the scope of this tract, been able but briefly to treat of the history involved, giving a special attention unto the part by which the Yahweh is to guide the feet of everyone who is anxious to take up the cross and to follow him safely over the bottomless pit, into which all other living are soon to fall. For the truth here brought to light, shining as clearly as it does, should convince and convert all the honest who wish to escape the coming doom. Therefore may all take it to heart and profit. As a last line to keep Yahshua's people, Yahshua's faithful followers, from being swept away by the religion of either power, Yahweh has wrought the prophetic chain of the events herein brought to view. Those who expect to be led and to be saved by the word of the truth, also to be delivered from the time of the trouble by the Michael standing up, Daniel 12:1, which trouble the present distress of the nation is about to bring forth, should not hesitate now to take their stand on the side of the right and truth. For this cause, brother, sister, is the light now shining on your path. Under those who take the heart of Yahshua's warnings and who stand on his side is made the promise. And they that be wise shall shine as the brightness of the firmament, and they that turn many to righteousness as the stars forever and ever, Daniel 12:3. Many shall be purified and made white and tried, but the wicked shall do wickedly, and none of the wicked shall understand, but the wise shall understand. Daniel 12:10. And now, having heard the conclusion of the whole matter, fear Yahweh and keep his commandments, for this is the whole duty of man. Ecclesiastes 12:13. Now arise and shine. Make the psalmist praise your own. Say, O Yahweh, thou hast taught me from my youth, and hitherto have I declared thy wondrous works. O Yahweh, thou art my Elohim. I will exalt thee. I will praise thy name, for thou hast done wonderful things. Like counsels of old are faithfulness and truth. Psalm 71:17 and Isaiah 25:1. This brings the close of our study this hour. Contact us at the 11th hour. Call us number 11. Click on our audio archives. We're going to close now with a song. Over the Sunset Mountain. Over the sunset mountain, someday how soft we go, into the hands of Yahshua, he who has loved me so. Over the sunset mountain, heaven awaits for me. Over the sunset mountain, yes, where my Savior is seen. Darling, before the end, shadows will flee away. Sorrow will be forgotten. Oh, what a wonderful day. Over the sunset mountain, heaven awaits for me. Over the sunset mountain, yes, you're my Savior of the sea.